nine cubicles that we had yesterday. I think now they're standing there. Can we look at Aisha, to get she who's living us on it? They'll put it together. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. We have been tasked to amend, as proposed yesterday, the principles that was considered. In principle one, in the document before you, what we were required to do was to refer to the Constitution and make that the starting point from which all of the principles and the rules will flow. So the amendment effected in one was to the effect that Section 58 and 71 of the Constitution grants the privileges to members of the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. And we've inserted that these sections also contemplate the enactment of legislation that grants and regulates further privileges to members of the NA and NCLP. What flows thereafter is what the existing or the original Principle 1 had contained. So it picks up after the Constitution what is provided in the powers and privileges, and specifically that Section 6 of that Act grants the President and members of both houses the right of freedom of speech. We went back to the Privileges Act and found that specific mention was made to the President, and that was retained in Principle 1. In Principle 2, the new one, what we had done was we combined the essence of 2 and 5. It starts out by providing that unparliamentary expressions and conduct is not permissible, and that it is decided on a case-by-case basis, taking into account the right of freedom of speech and the nature, tone, and context in which it occurs. So what is required is that the presiding officer in any given situation is tasked with balancing those rights. We also provided further that it includes words and language that is offensive, abusive, insulting, disrespectful, and threatening gestures. So in that list, it should be noted that it's not a closed list, but those are the types of things that may constitute unparliamentary expressions and conduct. In Principle 3, we had combined mostly the original wording of Principles 6 and 7, but what we did was we moved that up to the unparliamentary language and expression. 4, what we've inserted was that there is to be no reflection on the merits of any matter on which a judicial decision is pending. The next one is retained as is. 6 was the old Principle 8, and no amendments were required, and the old Principle 9, there were no amendments required. Thank you, Chair.
I think that's just an addition, Chair. The old Principle 9, the sense that we're getting, or we got yesterday, was that it's unnecessary. That's the one that talked about a chief who intervening on behalf of another member. So in the version that the Federal has updated, we have removed that. And also on what is now 6, remember the issue was whether the onus should be on the presiding officer to clarify what exactly is being brought out of order. We have inserted the word where possible, because we recognize that when a member raises a point of order, they will state what the point of order is, and also it may not always be possible for the chair to repeat what was said. So we said where possible.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much to the team. I just want to make proposal as far as Principle 1 is concerned. What we have not captured in that, with reference to Section 58 and 71, is that in specifically Section 58, because they that amendments derived in principle from the National Assembly bar two that can be appointed outside of the cabinet, outside of the National Assembly, and the same applies to deputy ministers. I think I would like to propose that we say Section 58, specifically one of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996, grants privileges to cabinet members and deputy ministers, members of the National Assembly and National Council of Provinces. The reason being, if we say it like this, then the two members of cabinet and the two deputy ministers are not covered in this principle. And obviously we must cover them, and they are covered in terms of Section 58. So I just thought, let's just make sure, because there are two members of cabinet who are not members of the National Assembly. And there are also two deputy ministers who are not members of the National Assembly. So I think we just cover them, comprehensively.
Chair, in the rules number two, please understand, never in my life did I think I would be having to ask this. The last sentence says, these include words and conduct that are offensive, abusive, insulting, disrespectful, and threatening. I think we have to add the word, these include words and sounds, because people are hissing and meowing and barking in the National Assembly. So, as embarrassing as an MP, I find that we have to add that.
Could I ask, though, I agree with Ms. Mazzoni, doesn't conduct cover that?
Yes, I'm trying to get used to the National Council of Provinces. We had agreed that SALGA do get some recognition through the Constitution. Can we include that? That one. So that while she's emphasizing about the other executive members that are not, that have been sworn in but who are not members of the National Assembly, it also goes along with SALGA.
We do not cover that we are fighting section of the Constitution.
That's why I'm raising it because SALGA is covered.
If you fight a section, is so detailed sometimes you can't put everything in the principle. But naturally, the section of anything that we have, they can cover many other aspects of the Constitution.
Chair, I learned yesterday that in the Constitution, was it 42 that they were using? Yeah, 67. They were using that chapter. That's all I'm saying, that mentioned that one so that SALGA can be covered from the start of the process.
Okay.
My colleagues were turning out. I thought there was a request for some legal clarity on the issue of SALGA and the foreign cities. And practice that been that SALGA participates in foreign cities. And there was a view that perhaps you needed legal clarity on the matter. So we did not understand the directive to be that we must include SALGA in the document. The committee will guide us.
Chairperson, I'll just say we must not forget where this derives from. This is actually the principles that are coming from the problem that we've had. I think going forward, when we are revising the joint rules, we will deal with that matter and we will have clarity. But I don't think we need to incorporate that at this stage because there is clarity that there is freedom of speech. And I think that is the essence of it. That we wanted to capture in paragraph one. And then secondly, I would support Natasha on the inclusion of reference to SALGA.
Yeah, no, I thought that Jefferson, while I support Natasha on the sound, I thought you clarified ourselves yesterday about SALGA. That's why we went back to the Constitution. So I knew that they've got 10 delegates. And we even went further to 162 where it spoke more about them in local government. So I thought that all those constitutional, we pulled them out to the sun, saying that I don't think there's more work that has to be done because It was just the context of how the Honorable from the NCOP put it. But when we realized that, which is what we were saying, that there's nothing wrong, there's no constitutional violation, and then from there on then said, with that clarity that there is some constitutional element that they used to be able to allow them to participate, why wouldn't we the Southern Cone go for that? See, and include that.
But that it is one donor, as we give their rules, the joint rules, to cover the problem. At the moment, it's the ruling that we are trying to draw. And then for to assist the speaker to rule on the issue that is outstanding for a year now. Not sure how it will be, but I think we are covering the principle for that. Rather than going that, even the principle will assist us for future consideration. We may not assist us for something that happened a year ago. Very few members of parliament even recall what happened in that year. Therefore, I think that the point that we are raising was raised in terms of the rules that we're delivering. Okay, the joint sitting is that. Colleagues, any other issue? Yeah.
Chief, can I just talk in paragraph 3? We are saying here, members may not include it of the notice to other members or cast personal reflections or aspersions on their integrity as members. Integrity, is it as members or integrity, full stop? In other words, you know, you cannot really differentiate your private and your public life if you're in politics. So if you impute an improper motive to say he is an aggressive person type of thing, you know what I'm meaning. So I was just wondering if we should not delete the reference to as members.
We may not put it down because the same of member of the parliament, member of the NCOP, or what later young people who are part of the government and the council, then we can do that. But I think you decide that we should delete it. And then it's fine for us to then move on. The advocate is certain. Work out.
Thank you.
Yeah, my apologies.
You promised to start something very exciting for us. We tried for it yesterday to add some focus for the further discussion, but not now. We'll come back soon.
Fine.
Okay, so let us move on. For any issue on principle 4?
No.
This is it.
I was just wondering if we should not expand on to a charge. Should we not say a judicial or a criminal charge, or, you know, so that we can make it clear that it's a matter pending before the courts? I would just.
People don't do that.
The problem that the table is not looking at them. That
no. They just said that.
Yeah, the one who are privileged to see them directly.
Yeah, I'm not far from them.
Members of parliament, when they sit there, they also show them. Come up. Okay, colleagues, let's go to see. Where possible, we put the data to make it much more than not appear.
And the principal, Lafan?
Yeah, okay.
The principal, Lafan?
The principal, okay.
So when the delegation for the Sophie comes, I will say the under principal
applauded.
We applauded. Applauded the work that they have done. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Alicia. Thank you for the good work. Of course, then we can finish accordingly.
We are comfortable with that because the issue that the honourable board is not covered yet.
Yeah, we are comfortable.
Yes.
Okay. We want everyone to go along with that. That's when for that. When members leave some of the things at night, sometimes they find that let's move them to page 11. 14A, conduct of members.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning to Honourable Members. This chapter deals with order in joint sittings and rules of debate. Then we start with order in joint sittings. Section, the first part of the chapter deals with the categories of office bearers that are covered by the Constitution in terms of freedom of speech. The President, Cabinet members, Deputy Ministers, members of the Assembly, delegates to the Council, officials in the National Executive, Provincial Executive, and of course we go back to the issue of local government. Referred to in section 67. And it says subject to the rules and orders. This is trying to recognize the fact that there may not be a rule on every issue. Sometimes you could have just orders of the houses, these are divisions of the house on a particular matter. And hence you want to say orders as well. And then we get to conduct of members. Again, Honourable Members, largely this has been taken from your current NA rules, where members must, okay, the first part of it, it's being deleted, where members must at all times accord the presiding officers and members due respect and conduct themselves with dignity and in accordance with the decorum of a joint sitting, and are required, and it stipulates the things that members are required to do, and or leave the chamber with decorum, to be seated when the bells stop ringing, to mark the start of proceedings, to rise if possible when the presiding officer enters. This refers to members who may not physically be able to rise, where it says if possible. Not during proceedings to pass between the chair and the member who is speaking, not between the chair and the table, or stand in any of the aisles or cross aisles, not to cross the floor of the house in front of the benches, not to bring weapons of any kind, nor dangerous or threatening articles, objects, nor replicas of any such articles or objects into the chamber, excluding cultural objects, with the prior approval of the speaker. Yes, in here, where you are going to bring a cultural object, you must have the prior approval of the speaker or the chairperson of the council. to dress in a manner befitting the dignity and decorum of the city, as may further be provided in the guidelines. We don't have guidelines at the moment, dress code. If there's a bourgeois decision to develop those, that will be applicable. Party symbols are not allowed in on the floor of the house. This does not address the gallery, not the floor of the house. Not to take photographs of video footage during proceedings, speak on a cell phone, eat, read newspapers, or in any way conduct themselves in a manner not befitting the dignity and decorum of the joint sitting. And on adjournment of the sitting to rise, if they are able to do so, and remain in their seats until the room is adjourned. I do not know if there are any issues here.
Remind the former colleagues they have worked on this, yes. And we have followed it from their work. Surely, because many of you want to leave at one, bear in mind that after we work already within a year, can't change fundamentals from the principle that was taken. Colleagues, let us deal then with the conduct of members. One and two, if you need to have the bold, the folded one, or only session there, taken from what is existing already, avoiding reinventing the wheel, from the rule that is existing into the 1998. Natasha, Yanni, Camille.
Chair, I just want to say something practical, which I speak from experience. On D, where the last sentence, nor stand in any of the aisles or cross aisles. I think we have to add in there, unless permission has been granted by the presiding officers, because I think you all know that I had spine surgery, and I wasn't allowed to sit for a period of longer than 5 minutes at a time. So my party wrote to the presiding officers and informed them, and the presiding officers wrote back and said, that's fine, I have got permission to stand in the aisles because it was for a medical purpose. And you'll remember Honourable Kappa actually stood up and called a point of order on me, and very kindly the ANC whips jumped on her like hyenas and quickly told her that she must withdraw and sit down. But nonetheless, it was embarrassing and it was unnecessary. So I think, you know, these rules are, we make hard rules, and these are hard rules, so we have to make allowances for any eventuality. You know, so it might sound pedantic and how many people might have spine operations, but it has to be in there, that nor stand in any of the aisles or cross aisles unless permission has been granted by the presiding officers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
To the defense of the National Council of Provinces.
No,
for chance, until you're not even here.
We should have a rule that says no party will refuse to stand when exercising of the
parliament. That's me. That one is going to create the
law. Even if you are protesting, you must then hold it and sit down and complain.
Impossible. Something could be wrong before
you go. No, I was just saying, Chair, with the same D, given that Castle has not been able to give them mics when it's a joint session. So they keep quiet because they're disciplined. But when there's an order or when they want to raise a point of privilege, how far does this rule help them to be active in the area where they sit, the National Council of Provinces?
But this is the conduct.
Yes, it's conduct of members, because they can check. You know that it's difficult. The Honourable told you yesterday that he can't even, his knees are not, the chairs are making the squeeze, you see. So I'm just saying also that because they don't have mics there, you see. No. Be a patriot. I know you don't like to do, but that's it. But can Chair, Because Ayubunmi said the National Council of Member, I mean the provinces member, is seated there. But they don't have mic, they'll have to move wherever they are. How far does that rule touch on that?
That one, yesterday we raised it also, we said that at the logistic level, rather than at the rules, we should accommodate the issue that they raised. But let us deal with that one at the management level in terms of the logistics of how the issue is raised. But that is a point that we should take care of.
Would you allow me to just go back to 14AA, freedom of speech, in the joint sentence? I would like to know the reference to officials in the national executive. What does that mean? Because the constitution describes the cabinet and it speaks of the deputy minister. But in 66, with reference to members of the National Executive, reference is made to an official in the National Executive or a provincial executive. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean the DG? Does it mean... You see, but it is a provincial executive member. So I just... think we should think very clearly, and that brings me back to the point that I raised earlier. That I unfortunately believe that because we want to do a thorough job, we should get a written legal opinion about participation of 66 and 67 officials, local government representatives, etc., in joint sitting. If we can give a legal opinion about whether that automatically introduces them into a joint sitting, and also what it means by the national executive or the provincial, an official in the provincial and the national executive, I believe we should have absolute clarity, Chairperson. When we write the rules, what do we mean? That there is no misinterpretation of that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Sure.
Then, Chairperson, I'm on E. The the exclusion of cultural objects. I'm a little bit worried here because some cultural objects are very dangerous. So how are we going to prevent that, even if the speaker, even if there's approval by the speaker or National Council of the chairperson of the council agreed to that member to bring it in the house? But how are we going to prevent that from being used if it gets hot in the chamber? We know the kind of members we have these days. I'm referring to our cultural objects. You know, the Zulus and Swazis always carry their spears and shields and nokgiris. So how are we going to prevent that in the house?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to go one step back to what Ms. Kirin was saying, and I'd like to ask a question. Section 6 of the Powers and Privileges Act, and it's referenced in the principal document that we were discussing earlier. It says that members of the NA and NCFP have freedom of speech in joint sittings. Okay. Now, if you look at Section 66, which is the section Ms. Killian referred to, 71 says that... I'm just going to 65. Basically, it says that members of the national executive or provincial executive who attend a council or committee meeting of the council may have freedom of speech. But my understanding is that they are not members. All right? So if you look at if you if if you look at Section 6 of the Powers and Privileges Act, it only extends freedom of speech to members, not to other officials of provinces and so on. So I don't think there's an inconsistency with the Powers and Privileges Act and the Constitution, but there is, yeah, it doesn't seem to be clear to me, if you follow me.
Mr. Chair, I think, as far as I remember, the issue of freedom of speech, there's that slight difference between the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces in the Constitution. And the reason being is that we have officials included, as Honourable Killian pointed out. Whether that refers to the possibility of participation by SALGA, members of SALGA, that can participate or that can at least sit or be part of the NCOP, I think that would be a good conclusion or a logical conclusion why it's there. But when we come to joint sittings, which we're dealing with here, it's a different kettle of fish, so to speak. That being so is because the joint sittings, privileges are not covered in the Constitution. That's covered, as Mr. Handlik has pointed out, in the Powers and Privileges Act. And yesterday I forwarded some opinions that our office did to my colleague, Ms. Mann. Ours. Sorry. My apology. Indicating that although SALGA has a constitutional role in the NCOP, there's nothing in the Constitution that gives it a constitutional role in joint sittings. So that's a policy issue. That's something that can be decided in the rules if we want to write in a role for SALGA officials. And in that opinion that I forwarded to Ms. Bauer, the conclusion was, if we do that, then just please remember that we need to cover them in terms of privilege as well. But to cover them in privilege, we'll have to not only have a rule, but we'll have to change the Powers and Privileges Act, because the Constitution specifically requires that further privileges must be provided in national legislation. That's not an issue for the rules. So that's my view on the so-called inconsistency there. I don't think there's inconsistency. It's just we need to unpack it clearly and to see the three areas in which Parliament operates. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think there is a different section in the Powers and Privileges Act that affords people coming to brief Parliament privilege and protection. Anything they reveal to Parliament is protected, and that is to enable anybody to be truthful to Parliament. I think the only charge that they can face for anything that they reveal to Parliament is perjury, because they could have lied to a court, and there could be that contradiction. But I know in another section of the Powers and Privileges Act, there is privilege afforded to people coming to brief Parliament. It was something that came up in the SABC, the inquiry on the SABC recently. Thank you.
This discussion emphasizes the need for legal clarity on this matter. Because you also need to draw a distinction between a committee of Parliament and the House. So I think we really do need clarity on this issue. Certainly on the first part of this section.
Chairperson, and then I don't want to ask to confuse giving evidence with freedom of speech. I mean, it's two different concepts. So, yes, there is giving evidence before proceedings, you are protected, unless you commit perjury. But the point is, that is not freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is something completely different. And we're talking about debate, etc. So we must not confuse the two issues. Therefore, as I have indicated, I really believe we should have a thorough engagement on this matter, so that we know we are constitutionally proceeding in the right direction.
But they don't behave in the chamber, they don't give us freedom of expression. But I think that's the next question. to make a point? Make a point first before.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I just wanted to echo what Advocate Jenkins has said. And I think just clarity there is in the Constitution. It says, as he has indicated, that under Section 71, which deals with privilege, sub 71.2, other privileges and immunities of the NCOP delegates to the Council and persons referred to in Section 66 and 67 may be prescribed by national legislation. So the Constitution provides for the privilege to be provided, and then it's that the Powers and Privileges Act does not specifically then do so. So that is, in my view, it is just what needs to be looked at. And it then becomes, obviously, that legislation amendment issue and also the rules, the joint rules and orders of the rules of both houses or the joint rules to then provide for that.
Then that, as far as you are concerned, that is a clear clarity. But what we have to do then is to write it down and say what is the procedure that we should follow without the rules, the joint rules, that may also be considered by both houses in terms of our area that belong to them. Okay. But as this is a document, just a one page. So the constitution is here. I'm a layman anyway. I don't know how to read this. Too complex for me, at least Nyami knows it very well. And then I rely on you, trained legal mind, to assist to clarify. I'm clear about the politics of it, but how to put it in legal terms is a duty. To put it in legal terms, that would be easy to be interpreted by members of parliament. If you are worried about traditional weapons, I'm not sure what I can say with today. They can be dangerous sometimes, but if a member says, the speaker, please, or another speaker, please, or saving this, and I was going to come with my not hearing, is granted a permission, that is the responsibility of that member to ensure that they were going not to use that against us. And I will be arrested, really. But I'm not sure what else we can do.
Chairperson.
Yes. We have raised those kind of things, especially when we're dealing with NA rules, with regard to the helmet. We have seen them used in the house and nothing happened. So with this one, I'm telling you, unless we want to see blood on the floor. So I would suggest that we remove this. It's really not safe. They are using glasses in the house, they are using bottles, they are using their helmet. So they can grab this spear from an innocent person who has been granted permission to bring it in the house and use it. And then what?
Chair, quite frankly, I think that we take political correctness one step too far here. Because it is not politically correct to allow someone to bring a knob carrier into the sacrosanct space of Parliament and for me to be concerned if it's going to be used against me. That takes away my right. Just as much as the person has the right to brandish cultural wear, I have the right to my safety and not to fear my workplace. Now, I personally wish everyone would come to Parliament dressed in cultural wear, but I also know enough about South African culture that all cultural wear does not necessitate the brandishing of weapons. So we can dress in our cultural wear without bringing weapons to Parliament. It's actually that simple. And I think that we should in fact encourage cultural wear to be worn in Parliament so that it shows our beautiful diversity. But I think that we should, the sentence should read, not to bring weapons of any kind, nor dangerous or threatening articles or objects, nor replicas of any such articles or objects into the chamber, full stop.
If a person is a Sangoma, don't forget that there are members of Parliament who are Sangomas. A person is a member of Parliament, fully qualified Sangoma, and then he says to the Speaker, my whatever,
saying today, I'm not saying my no kill. Don't forget that some government, they don't have big no kill. It's a very short one. And then so you deny the right of other members, their right to participate in parliament to start discussing. Because it's just, you know, the reason why we put everything this way, that there should be permission from the speaker, is exactly because that people are not normal in the National Assembly. But I'm just saying that's why if you leave it, it's far easy because no one will challenge you that are not allowed to do so. No one has applied for it. It's not an issue at all. Because otherwise, I think we are going to cause problems. That in fact, there are about 17 members of members who are Pangoma.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can't deny them their right to come with their Pangoma issues. They're in the shame.
They are not practicing in the chamber.
No.
They carry those things of theirs when they are busy with their own things. No.
Let us not deny the rights of other people. They are not practicing in the chamber.
No, I can't come to your rescue on this one, Chairperson. Because it's very unpredictable. Human beings are very unpredictable. You see, I mean, we allowed Makarapas to come into the house with regret after some time. They've used them. While they were, when they were seated right on that side, they were saying, these are not weapons, these are just what the workers were wearing. But over some time they used it. So, but also, Chair, don't forget that we also say the fact that we used were to allow to have the white shirts to come into the house, but because we felt threatened at some stage by the behavior of different members, and they took away our right of being present in the house and feeling secure. And this is the argument that she's presenting, that if you are going to threaten by mere bringing your Nopkiri into the house, we're not going to be able to be sure that you're not going to Nopkiri us at some stage. So we're unprotected.
Okay, no, let us close this matter. It just worries me. The debate that we had when we were discussing the National Assembly rules was almost saying, please, because don't deny the rights of other South Africans who are qualified to be members of parliament when they make prior arrangements with the speaker to do so. But also, you know, the leadership group that you are the one that has a very strong against Makarapa. But all parties rejected that rule of telling, no, parties rejected the threshold issue. And then the team sit down, I think it was Natasha and Julie, prepare what they call a threshold to avoid wearing Makarapa. The parties rejected. And that you can't prescribe that to anyone. That's an issue that I made. I just think that we must have to be particular, that we don't undermine the issue of our people. Okay.
Yes. Can I just say that I do support the Deputy Chief Whip and also Natasha, that we should delete it. And I'm saying this because I know members may not even be aware that it is no longer there. Secondly, it just makes it easier to ensure that the decorum of the House is intact. Thirdly, I just want to say that at the time when we were very sensitive and politically correct during the drafting of the NA rules, we've unfortunately seen some steps that have gone further. I mean, at that stage, we have not had the vandalization of parliamentary buildings. That was before. Thereafter, we know there's a new level of disorder, and we do this for the safety of members. Dress code is one thing, but here it is directly relating to the safety of members. Thank you.
So maybe this is one of those things that will have to be escalated in the discussion of this matter specifically. And I also thought, without wanting to complicate things, that maybe our legal team could just say whether this would be denying people the right to their cultural expressions in terms of Section 31 of the Constitution at some point. Because remember, cultural, this is objects, it doesn't say weapons.
Yeah.
So not have to be an object, kills. It could be
object.
An object which is harmless, that a member would want to bring into the house. For whatever purpose. We could be celebrating Heritage Month or Heritage Day, and people want to refer to their cultural objects. So I think it's a discussion that perhaps should not be closed at this point. It should be taken to another level.
Okay, let us like this, colleagues. Mm-hmm. It's just we are doing this because we had a long discussion on this.
Yeah.
My view was that we are modernizing in South African stage. There are things that we must discourage. And there was persuaded by Nyanu, who cited this thing that they should stand for here and don't deny them their right of being members of parliament. That's the issue that was raising. I thought that was a fair point, given the constitutional right of people to exercise, but also given the CR cultural right and what linguistic. Linguistic tea. You can't do that at all. But let us let it. We maintain that a little bit. But I agree in terms of Makarabas. Makarabas are not cultural things.
They are.
No. They're not cultural things. Makaraba, in fact, is not at all. It's not regarded as cultural things. It's just things that are doing it for dress code issues. When we try to persuade parties about the dress code, and then the leadership group was indicating, in fact, was motivating very heavy in our National Assembly room,
yeah.
That this thing now, in fact, it was covered by the media that this thing is dangerous, it's a projectile, And then they were correct on that, but the party didn't agree with that.
Chair, I just want to say, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So if a Sangoma is going to come in with a curfew, you can't stop someone coming in with a makarapa. Because what I deem cultural and what you deem cultural are going to be two different things. That's why you take the whole issue out of the equation. And while the Sangoma has a right to come into Parliament according to cultural and linguistic rights, according to limitations of rights, I also have rights in the House. And one of my rights is to work in a safe environment. So just on record.
That's why we are drafting rules for a multicultural society that will cover all cultures. You must not exclude anyone. That's the point that I'm raising. You can't exclude any person. Because there are a lot of laws that protect them. And then, of course, Makaraba can never be a traditional thing, truth speaking. But let us move on. I found no culture in South Africa that uses Makaraba as a cultural thing at all. But not a single one. But let us move on, so this will come back to it. Jenkins and the team, you look at it and advise accordingly. Agreed?
Mm-hmm.
Also. Let us move forward.
They must also look at it for the public. Or they do come in, they worry. If they can just find the way out. Public access. You know that there's that other boy who will just get up and start. Yeah, I know it's a. I don't know the check on the relative. Then they go, and they worry about the funny things there.
Yeah.
It's what he calls cultural weapons, but there he goes on, you know, getting worried that they can do that stuff in the house. If you can just manage, how do you feel with it?
Chair, we now proceed to Rule 14C. A member not to be, we start with 14B, members not to converse aloud. So if members may not converse aloud during debate, then 14C, no member may interrupt another member while speaking except to call attention to a point of order. This is page
12.
Yes. To call attention to a point of order. Or a question of privilege, subject to joint rule, except at the discretion of the presiding officer, or on a point of clarity, or at the discretion of the presiding officer, on a point of clarity to request permission to put a question to the member speaking. Okay, then 14D, order at adjournment when a joint sitting arises, members shall rise and remain in their places until the presiding officer has left the chamber. And precedence of the presiding officer, whenever the presiding officer addresses members during a joint meeting,
Any member then speaking or offering to speak must resume his or her seat, and the presiding officer must be heard, there's a type of it, heard without interruption. And I think the significance of that, of this, why you're removing debate, because sometimes we have ceremonial joint sittings where there is no debate, just an address. So it's important to make it clear. Here, relevance of the petition, the presiding officer may order a member addressing a joint sitting to stop speaking if the member, despite warnings from the chair, persists in irrelevant or repetitive arguments. This rule has never been applied. There have been invitations to presiding officers to apply it, but I think it's a difficult rule to apply.
This is a rule that will remain there. It's a very docile rule. It's a whip of the team. There are no colleagues.
I just wanted to make one point with regards to 14D, order of adjournment. I think this is already covered here under 14A, 2H. If we read it there, to dress in a manner befitting the dignity of the law, not to take photograph on adjournment of the joint sitting, to rise if they are able to do so and remain in their seats until the presiding officer has left the chair. So I do believe that that one is already captured, so we can probably delete it. But I would like to pose the question with regards to question of privilege. I know we have it in the NRA. It is here on the interruption of a member. You see, and I know it's part of parliamentary procedure, but it is really becoming extremely disruptive. That members are trying to raise points of order and then points of privilege that are not points of privilege. And Chairperson, 14C, member not to be interrupted. Now, I just wanted to have clarity, and as the legal team of please tell us, and it just again explain the issue of a question of privilege. And then we will probably have to do the same and also explain that when we meet with the presiding officers, because that is being abused at present.
Chair, when we deal with the rules of debate, we've made provision for that matter. It's on page 20.
I think the point that you are raising is not a principal point, it's strategy. Because you know that that is the point of view that the way we've drafted the National Assembly rules, it just has not been applied. And that is an issue that has to be explained to you. Can we, any other issue, call it that you think is problematic? Parent, happy, and that's the truth. They're happy. You're still with us?
Let me know what you say.
You're still with us?
Yes.
Okay, colleagues, can we move to cross-orderly?
Yes, cross-disorderly comments. Chair, again, this is taken from the NA rules. Members may not engage in cross-disorderly conduct in a joint sitting, including deliberately creating serious disorder or disruption in any manner whatsoever, physically intervening, preventing, obstructing, or hindering the removal of a member from the chamber who has been ordered to leave the chamber, repeatedly undermining the authority of the presiding officer, or repeatedly refusing to obey the rulings of the presiding officer, or repeatedly disrespecting and interrupting the presiding officer while the latter is addressing the joint sitting, persisting in making serious allegations against a member without following the proper procedure, or using or threatening violence against a member or other person acting in a way, in any other way, to the serious detriment of the dignity, decorum, or ordinary procedure of joint sitting.
There is any new idea in this room, then?
Yes. Let's see. Overall, we are not talking about the presiding officer. You know what Honorable Malila did to the speaker when he indulged into attacking her directly for more than half an hour. We couldn't do anything, all of us. So I think we should also come to the protection of the presiding officer, that a member can't just stand up and make a long attack on the speaker or any other person there presiding. They feel very unprotected and vulnerable at that moment because it's directed at them. You see. Now I'm raising your chair.
Yeah. Let us draw distinction. The lack of rules and non-application of rules. Because we may also just take long for a time doing observations for that. Because it's not directly going to be applied. But bearing in mind that we said yesterday that the officer when they see the case is there. They also manage the politics. They also manage the politics, the moves, and everything they share. Sometimes they only apply a rule that robots. They have to apply mine before they apply the rule. But I thought that is an issue when the president tried to come and address a member stand up there and then try to address the speaker in a manner that is not as fitting as to allow the president to act. But I think that's a point that you are raising.
Yeah. But not to the presiding officer, you see. While they are saying that they must take policies, it's policies, but they also, when you go into a personal life, why would you be allowed? I mean, and it's not even said that the chief whip must come in at least to ask a member not to continue. So that the presiding officer does feel a little bit protected because it's directed to her or him, but they can't come up and protect themselves. I'm just trying, I know it's an incident that happened in the House chapter, yet even after we've done the rules. So as I'm reading this one now, I'm trying to think about those circumstances. You forgive me, is that I'm trying to trick your mind to find out. But there's nowhere where presiding officers are protected.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think I'll disagree with Honorable Nyan Boy on this one. The presiding officers are protected by the rules. They should not allow this interaction between themselves and these members. They must just apply the rule, finish. Yeah. That's how they are protected. And in many cases in the chamber, even if we want to protect them, they will face one direction, Mr. Khaza, the side of the people they are talking to. No, they'll be looking at the EFF. That's what they always do. We'll raise our hands to try and protect them, but we are not given an opportunity. So what do we do? They must just apply the rules. Thanks.
Well, I think they are applying their rules very well at the moment. And at the moment, Nyan, you want to protect where they are not at hand. They are applying their rules very well at the moment. Any issue police in terms of the laws or valid misconduct. For the joint city. Is there any issue that we think we need to cover that area? We don't have a problem. We move to putting G member order to be the chamber.
That's right. Putting G deals with the members being ordered to leave the chamber in the opinion of the presiding officer. The member is disregarding the authority of the presiding officer. If the member's conduct is grossly disorderly, he or she may order them to withdraw from the legal chamber for the remainder of the day's proceedings. Now, I would like to draw the attention of the meeting to 14G2. A member ordered to leave the chamber, to leave the chamber.
chamber must immediately withdraw from the proceedings of the parliament. We would want or would request that this matter be looked at carefully. There is one thing to remember, to a certain number to leave the chamber, you are managing proceedings. You are ensuring that there is order in debate. Now, whether then asking them to leave the precincts of parliament doesn't get you into the space of punitive measures, to the space of punishment. In other words, you don't just want them to go to the offices, but you want them to leave completely. They can't do anything in parliament. So we think that this should be considered carefully, especially in light of the recent court judgment on automatic suspension of members. It was the court felt that rule was not unlawful. Couldn't this amount to something similar to a suspension, automatic suspension? So my legal colleagues were also advised on that. All we are saying is that perhaps we need to look carefully at this. It was taken as is from the old rules about the precincts of parliament.
No, I'm not sure. Just taken from an old rule. I thought that you created it because of circumstances at that stage. That you would have preferred that you should not be in the in parliament, you can't be in the precincts, you must be outside. That's what you were saying. I'm just trying to recall the argument that we're using. And the circumstances that it does happen because you are removed from parliament. And even the precincts of parliament would have prepared you to be outside so that you can feel the punishment. That is, don't reconduct yourself in that particular way. And we're not taking anything away from you. We're not, because you're outside already where you're supposed to be exchanging views with us, you see. And to go and sit in the office and cause another disruption, that you should be outside the precincts of parliament. I'm just trying to, we argued here extensively about it, and we agreed with it.
Chairperson, I'm not currently 100% convinced. What I was aware of was that deducting from a person's salary without a process as a punitive measure. Now, I'm not entirely sure that this is as severe. And in fact, it's the practice. It is being practiced all over Africa and other parliaments, etc., that members who misbehave, remember, it is gross misconduct. It's not refusing to withdraw or whatever, it's disruptive behavior, etc., etc. Now, all I'm asking is, should we not just get a specific reference to a court case where the parameters of what constitutes punitive measures, if we can have that, if we can have a proper understanding? I will not say we should not consider not including that. But currently it still stands in our NO rules, which means that we will have to revise our NO rules as well, if that is the case. If there has been a court finding that prohibits the presiding officer to use that, then clearly we need to correct it. But I just need, you know, to be convinced that in fact in law there has already been a case. Thank you.
I just think, colleagues, the secretary is raising an issue for us to apply our mind. It's not about court issue, it's not this one. The court one is about us trying to find the animals and the failure. Because rule out of all is punishment are not forcing and processes on that. But I think the point that is raised, separation, joint sitting from NA, because you are passing the rules for the joint sitting. Joint sitting sits not every month, generally. There are specific times when they are joint sitting. We know already that the State of the Nation is a joint sitting. It's coming next year. But it's not really like NA where we sit every day, now and then. What would be the impact of taking a member out of the precinct of parliament for a joint sitting? For NA, you can do so. You can do so for NA. For NA, we sit regularly in the joint sitting. And then, but it's not about us. I don't think it's a legal issue here. Jensen?
Yeah, no, thank you, Chairperson. Two issues. I think the one was partially referred to. When we're looking at the purpose of this rule, it's to restore order in the House.
Yeah.
And if we limit it to that, I mean, references to gross misconduct or and so forth, those are the kind of words you find in terms of Section 12 of the Powers and Privileges Act, which then refers to a charge, almost, I want to say, against the member, and then what constitutes contempt of Parliament would be disruptive behaviour and so forth. So that brings it into the area of disciplinary action. So I would agree with the concern of the Secretary to the NA in that regard, and if I remember correctly, and I am getting a bit grey sometimes, so it's not always good to trust my memory, but the judgment of Judge Davis in 2014 on this matter where the disciplinary proceedings against the EFF was taken on review and to get an interdict. He alluded to two things. One, the removal of the, not stipend, but the salary of members and how that would affect them to represent the constituencies, and then also to be removed from their offices. Judge Davis made a reference to that they will then be unable to conduct their constituency work because they cannot access their offices and whatever tools of trade they have. So that was the only reference that I know of. But I would think if we just apply sort of logical thinking to it, if the purpose of the rule is to restore order in the House and we want to project ourselves into a court battle around this rule, what we will find then is a judge asking us, but why do you want to remove him from the precinct if the order is restored in the House? What purpose does that serve? And that's a question that we will have to answer first before a council representing Parliament can answer that. So I think that would be the critical question to deal with here if we want to see whether we must cut this rule down to just its core purpose, which is let's restore order in the House. And I will leave it at that, Chair. Thanks.
I think okay. But I also wanted to clarify the point. The only time when you deduct salaries is when there has been a Powers and Privileges Committee process.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other suspensions where a member would have been suspended automatically. There was no deduction of salaries. There's never been there. So I thought I should just clarify that point. But I align myself with my colleague.
You see, experience is not. On one day when they were removed inside the House, they broke down the windows and the doors of Parliament. On another occasion, when they were removed from the House, nothing was done. They were just left. You see, the other problem is, it's worse with what they're saying, the state of the nation at all. Because you remember when the FISMAS 4 came to the House, they were demonstrating outside, and we had a long deliberation inside the House, should we start or should we not start, until we realized and hear that the FISMAS 4 delegation was already inside the precincts of Parliament. And when those that were removed from the House went outside, they started to address those people outside, and remobilization started to take place. And that is very dangerous. So for me, to sustain this position is because when they are in the precinct, they start mobilizing people again while you have asked them to withdraw, you see. So it doesn't end inside. They re-abuse their presence and the presence of them. But sometimes they bring delegations on top of them. And then from there, those delegations combined with them start to sing outside there, do another, and it becomes press on the police how to deal with such an environment. So it becomes unstoppable, it becomes an area of mobilization within the precinct. So if ever you allow them to be taken out for a day outside the precinct, it does bring stability even inside the institution itself. It does make everybody feel comfortable. But they remobilize people outside. And it does affect the precinct. It's because they're still inside the precincts of Parliament. But if you say to them, let's take them out, we take them out and hit over the outside the precinct, it will make life easier for all of us.
when we have been the National Assembly rules, it's important to look at the current situation that we said in the principle court. We are not trapping the rule for big talent. We are trapping the rule for generations to come. Then that we mustn't take the overwhelming issues now and think that are permanent feature of talent. They are not. Because then the rule has to be amended every time. People are saying that then if this one must go to the National Assembly, I mean, then there would be a haphazard situation. We are drafting the rules regardless of is what is happening now or not. We are drafting the rules for future people to come. You don't have to start the rule. That will be amended every month. It's because that if another party behaves very well, we amend the rules. Another one comes in, cause problem, we re-amend it. That doesn't work that way. We say that we stick to principles of drafting the rules. And then the current situation teaches us some lessons. But our rules are not past that. They are bigger than the current situation. Because that's the rules that we should do so. Because otherwise we have to amend them every time. And then we can cause problems for the organization generally.
Chairperson,
yes,
we must just remember this is just for the remainder of the day. It's not a period. It's just in the house.
Not even in the day.
So what I'm saying is, I have not been 100% convinced, and you know, best we just get sort of additional information before we just leave it.
It has been caused some if you take a person from the journey system, say it's alpha, like a people go out here, out of the city of parliament, there's no impact on it. Well, the next joint sitting will be 3 months down the line. We are just taking a member from that day only.
Yeah.
If you need to deal with that issue, that processes of this thing that we have already proposed, then I think that's what we have to do. As it stands, really, I think that doesn't cause harm either.
Chairperson, I'm in agreement with you that it isn't going to be legally unsound to have it or not to have it. But I would bear in mind that if you have a joint sitting, it could be something like a donor, or it could be to host a guest from a foreign jurisdiction. So it's a biggie, from Israel. Yeah, it could be a biggie event.
From
a biggie event that where you require a certain amount of authority to ensure that everybody's on the best behavior.
Let's go to the rules.
With your permission, we proceed to rule 14GA. It is about the removal of a member from the chamber. Chair, I do not propose to read all these sections or sub-rules, except to indicate that sub-rule 3 deals with automatic suspension, as well as sub-rule 4. So these two sub-rules have to be removed in line with the court position on the matter. So those will be removed. This was the EFF on 14 December 2016, made of the EFF, which was the Speaker of the NA, which had to do with the removal of a member. The court seems to have affirmed the rest of the rules, except for that part, the automatic suspension.
And in fact, we have failed. Then things will try to represent us well. We couldn't make it. And then we failed. That's why we must see that in the army team. I'm not quite sure that we do anything about it. We are still waiting for it. I think we should agree for it that we delete the one that is already rule and then move on to other areas.
And then sub-rule 13, this relates to the referral of the removal, physical removal to the structure within 24 hours. Members will recall that this was a compromise position. In the initial joint rules and NA rules, you did not have this provision. A fair process of engagement, inter-party engagement, a position of wish that you should have this oversight element to it. So when a member is being removed, there must be a committee that looks at compliance with the rules on this matter. There has been a proposal, I think, Danny, do you want to say anything on that? On this particular rule?
Thanks, Chair. Probably from the NCOP side, we were looking as to the feasibility of this rule, taking into account that in the delegation from the NCOP, you also have what we call special delegates who will have come for that particular meeting, and when it's over, then they revert back to their respective provincial legislatures. And as to how then do you ensure that this rule, you can give it effect. And I think in this case, we thought we needed collectively as administrators to apply our mind and to see as to whether would it be possible that might be also fresh it further to cover those instances. Might be for the purpose of this meeting in the NCOP, where we do have instances of this nature, and a member happens to come from the province, we also then, if for example there were any misbehavior, that we then report that as well to that respective provincial legislature where the member comes from. So that at least at the end of the day, we're able as well to ensure that whatever the member might have done here, it also finds expression in their respective provincial legislature.
So the intention of the rule was really not so much about the member, but about compliance with the removal process. So it's not even in this stage that the member was here before the committee. It's not a DC. It's a committee that is meant to just ensure that this rule is properly applied. The cases that we have heard, these issues served before the Joint Rules Committee, in the NA, before the NA Rules Committee. Then the NA Rules Committee referred them to this subcommittee, to a subcommittee, to a subcommittee. So I think that it's implementable, especially if you consider that it will be a Joint Rules Committee for each subcommittee. Now in the NA, a specific committee has now been established, subcommittee, for the removal of members.
But you see, you also have to recognize the phenomena of the National Council of Provinces, that when you are a special delegate, the expression, like even a letter writing between our joint committee here and alerting that particular legislature that your member is under suspension, whatever, some correspondence has to take place so that in that legislature that is coming from, he knows or they know that their member was conducted here and there's a communication. Of now, I think what you want, the protection from us, we should not end amongst ourselves here without it going to where it comes from, another legislation. I'm just saying that maybe we just have to more add up to say there will be some communication that goes to that particular legislature where it comes from.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that the contribution of the Honourable Member ensures that there is equal treatment of NCOP and NA members, regardless of what member of the legislature, which legislature they in. There was a misconduct in terms of the rules of this Parliament. Certain things are going to take place after it, but it may just be safer to cater for that as well. You're not saying that he must be punished or misconducted. You're just saying that insofar as something happens after the event, it happens to everybody equally.
Okay,
let's move on. And for the age, referral of members' conduct to the House, if the presiding officer has an opinion that a contravention committed by a member of either House is so serious of the nature that I'm probably withdrawn from the chamber for the remainder of the sitting is inadequate, the presiding officer may refer the matter to the Speaker or the President of the Council, whichever is relevant for appropriate action. Nothing must done.
Any issue then?
Expression of regret. A member who has been ordered to leave the chamber. So what we will do, Chair, we'll just try to harmonize the wording.
because one is not to use the sword, the other is not to use me. So we will have to just harmonize that. The member was in order to leave the chamber may submit the speaker or chairperson of the council their written expression of regret. Yeah, if the speaker or chairperson approves such expression of regret, he or he may discharge the order to leave the chamber or other action taken against the member. And the speaker or chairperson must inform the joint sitting of the House accordingly. This is what happened with honorable member of the DA, the example given by Ms. Kassani yesterday. Yeah. A written expression of regret approved by the speaker must be recorded in the minutes of proceedings. The 14J, reflections upon judges, etc., and certain other office bearers. No member may shall reflect upon the competence or integrity of a judge of a superior court, the holder of a public institution supporting constitutional democracy referred to in section 194 of the Constitution, or any other holder of an office, will remove her from such office dependent upon a decision of either house. I think something missing here is how members should, if they wish, if they feel that they have legitimate concerns about the holder, what they should do. So we need to provide a substantive motion in the respective house here, except that there will always be procedural and legal hurdles there, because the other house is not responsible for the certain of its members. It's only the NA.
And the NA is
I just wanted to say that is one of the pitfalls, Chair, that we will have to provide in the rules then that a member, they must take the necessary steps to ensure that the matter is duly dealt with by the National Assembly through a substantive motion. But it can't be either house. It must be the house that is responsible for it. So this is where we must tread carefully, again, with reference to the different mandates of the two houses.
So we do need to tread carefully because members of the other house may feel that their freedom of speech is being hampered. So they will say, okay, we can't raise these things here. We can't even raise them in our house because there is no provision for substantive motion on these issues in our house. So I think we do need to be careful and creative here.
I agree with everything that's actually been said. I just want to ask a language issue. In the second line, it says the holder of shouldn't be an office or the office of or an officer of. Like the holder of a public institution that doesn't make sense to me. Maybe I'm wrong.
We'll discuss that in the chapters.
Terms of
insurance for the
judges.
The NCOP will play a role in the appointment of judges.
North City. So that is one. There may be others. But I'm not aware of immediately.
But that was right for me. In such a way, we said the rules will accommodate all problems.
We are fine, sir. I think I was also discussing with Mr.
You are fine.
Well, I know as well that, for example, the magistrate as well, we do participate in the dismissal, so to say, when there are misconduct. We also do participate, they require resolution of the SOP as well as dismissal.
Well, let us start there. We can do that. Maybe continue here. Yes, okay.
Sir, for the case about grave disorder, in the event of grave disorder, a sitting of the officer may adjourn the sitting or may suspend the proceedings so it cannot be stated by him or this is your Uganda type of disorder.
Yes.
But the sitting suspended there.
In fact, the failure to suspend the sitting is the one that has abated the problem.
Oh.
Others were asking for the sitting to be suspended, and it was not suspended, and then the problem was just complicated by that.
Oh.
I think in those instances, you would need to suspend the proceedings.
Let's move on, unfortunately.
Can we just get clarity about the ACLP's role with the appointment and dismissal of judges and magistrates? Just clarity about whether that is listed as a concurrent function, because from my reading of Schedule 4, it's not. But just if we understand what the role is, you know, if it flows from specific legislation or whatever, it's just being mindful of the legislative schedule contained in the Constitution. Could we just have clarity about that?
I think in respect of, for example, misconduct of magistrates, in terms of the Magistrate Act, they also, those reports get referred as a letter of Parliament, not necessarily to Parliament, and therefore that's how then they should be getting involved in also looking into those misconduct. And indeed, if there's finally any recommendation that needs to be made, it talks of Parliament as well, which then requires the involvement of the NCLP.
Maybe I need to correct myself. On the removal of judges, 177, section 177 says, a judge may be removed from office only if subsection 1B, the National Assembly calls for that judge to be removed by a resolution adopted in the supporting vote of at least 2/3 of its members. So there is no involvement of the NCOP, but certainly in the JSC, the NCOP does play a part.
But for appointment of judges and magistrates, not for removal.
Not for removal. For removal of magistrates, maybe, but not for judges.
In the event of misconduct, for magistrate, the Magistrate Act makes mention of Parliament can recommend for the removal of it. That's why in most instances all the misconduct that the magistrate and the Magistrate Commission will also forward that report to Parliament, and part of them then are also considered by the NCOP. So if indeed Parliament, inclusive of the NCOP, tells them to decide that based on what is that they then recommend the removal, particularly I should emphasize magistrate, then in those instances then NCOP then will be involved.
Okay, no, I think let's allow the legal team to look at it. The intent in the general is that we can't just attack them. We appoint them, we can remove them, we can't attack them without any other person really.
It's that we can't be very yes, this is an SOE. She's fighting with ESCOM.
No, she's going out for the Corruption
Express.
She's
No, colleagues, the team, advocate, the team, said no advisor, please. Just try to find out there something, a rule that would cover both areas. Okay, can we move on?
Chair, we now move on to rules of debate.
Can you take a 10-minute break?
Yes.
10 minutes. The rules of debate are mostly...